Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the May 20th edition of Commodity Week. Well, the market has rallied in a big way. Is it sustainable in old and new crop or not? We'll try to find out today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Tim Hannigan from PGF Best. Our panelists in studio today include Mike Georgie of Allendale out of Mahomet, Illinois, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign, Illinois, and Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting from Lafayette, Indiana. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media from the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. You can always visit us online at willag.org. That's W-I-L-L-A-G.org.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Well, let's open our discussion with this question. Mike Georgie, what do you find most fearful in this very unique row crop marketplace?
Well, I think the thing that scares me the most is last week when you have the funds liquidating their positions on fundamental bullish news. Almost every call was, why are grains going down when we're not getting it planted? We're doing late and things like that. I think this week I felt a little better because I think they focus more on fundamentals. You usually talk and say, well, crude's going down and the dollar's up, so grains are going to go down. And you didn't really have that last week or this week. They were really focusing on the fact that we are being late planted, and you know, it's fun having the funds in there because they do make the market move, but when the money goes one way, you either get out of the way or go with them.
And Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing.
Well, I think I'd agree a lot with what Mike's saying. Over the last 2 weeks, I guess I'd put it a little bit different way, that the herd mentality that we've seemed to develop here over the last several weeks, you know, where, you know, it's time that, you know, we need to be getting out of the market. It's time that, you know, all those situations change and you just see everybody kind of move the same direction and try to get through the same door. And then, you know, everything kind of settles down and we kind of go back to the fundamentals again and look at that and see where we're at. So this herd mentality that we've got means that we can move big moves in a quick amount of time.
Mike Zuzolo, what do you think was the scariest part?
I think to pick up on Bill's point, those big moves, I think we're still at the beholden in the commodity markets and in the grain markets to the outside forces, the outside markets. I think to keep the fund demand and the fundamental demand engaged and interested, I think we still want to see a steady incline in prices, not a sharp rally, especially a sharp rally in both fuel and food prices, Todd. I think that becomes, once again, the arrow in Achilles' heel, so to speak, because if you get that sharp rally, it puts you one step closer to an 08-type market, and the conclusion in 08 was I should have sold more before the market fell out from underneath us. So outside market demand is still the biggest issue, and that was shown again last week.
On the weekly charts, we were up nearly 80 cents, not quite that much, in both corn and soybeans for the week. Is that a sharp rally?
Yes, that is a sharp rally. But keep in mind, the 3 weeks ago, we saw the big market fall, and it was because crude oil charged higher with the grains. And I think this time around, if we could have the grains move sharply higher on weather, the demand base could deal with that. They can cope with that. But it goes back to, if the fuel prices start to go up to those old levels that we saw 3 weeks ago, that's where we lose the commodity index funds. That's where the charts get overdone. That's where the food versus fuel debate reheats again. Those are the things that I'm talking about, where they both go up together.
Early in the week, we heard that it was both commercials and speculators that were in the marketplace. I want you to comment on that just a bit, Bill. But first, here's the way things settled in Chicago for the corn pit. July, $7.65 on its high. The low at $6.88¾. Remember, we give you the day and overnight trade, electronic and open outcry. July settled for the week at $7.59½. It finished 77½ cents higher than last Friday's settlement price. And December corn at $6.66½, but the new crop was up 39½ cents. Both sides of the marketplace were in.
Yeah, and I think that if you look over the past 6 months, probably, I think the commercial, the user, has done a very good job of coming in there on those dips and getting coverage on. And then if you take that out and kind of expand it from a fundamental standpoint, it makes you somewhat nervous, because it just makes it that much harder, I think, to cut back demand if those commercials have coverage on. In other words, they've got their positions covered. Price has a little bit tougher time cutting back usage. So I think they've done a real good job of that. I'm sure they'd like to have stuff bought in at lower levels, but then, as I said before, the herd mentality, the funds just kind of come in there after them then.
So they came in after them. You think that that's an interesting thought, because it gives you a lot more upside potential at this point.
I think that's a reality that we're facing right now.
I think that's very true. I mean, I think what they're focused on, or what they've talked about here, is in the country, the basis has really tightened up a lot for corn, even in areas that have a lot of corn. And they're worried now that we're going to run out of corn before we get the new crop in, and so it's a concern. And with ethanol production being back up, and exports were good when the prices fell, I think you've got a good support here and with higher potential.
Mike, I gave you a brand new car to drive on your trip from Indiana to Champaign-Urbana, and a new Nissan Leaf, no gasoline at all in that one. On your way down, I think you were listening to the Closing Mark Report Friday afternoon. I had the opportunity to talk to a new cash grain analyst, somebody from TruePoint, fairly large cooperative on 27 elevators along 75 in the western side of Ohio. I asked a question of him about how far along he thought his producers were in corn planting, and he said no more than 2%. It shocked me just a bit.
I think he has an excellent bead on the market right now, Todd. I think that's where you look at, like you talked about on the Closing Market Report, you look at Minnesota and you look at Ohio. You look at the eight states that were more than 23% behind the five-year average on last Monday's crop planting progress report, and you're talking about 21 million acres of corn that needs to get in the ground. When I spoke to producers and crop insurance people in that region throughout the week, yes, you still have until June 5th to get it planted, but after June 5th, you lose 1% per day on your crop insurance. It starts to become an issue, a monetary issue, of why wouldn't I take that $450 to $470 per acre of prevented planting and just come back in?
Yeah, and I think that there's two aspects to the prevented planting, and boy, that got a lot of talk this week in the trade, the prevent planting, and it well should, because of the Ohio situation, Kentucky, Tennessee as well, and several areas, some areas in Illinois even. But there's two aspects to it. One is the economic, as Mike said. The other, I think, is, I don't know, I'd call political or personal. I mean, if a farmer has prevent plant, has crop insurance, but his landlord doesn't, it's pretty tough for him to go ahead and take the prevent plan on it, that type of thing. But the economics are definitely there, and our conclusion in our office is that, number one, yes, there will be acres that will be abandoned because of prevent plant, that because of the coverage the prevent plant provides. And number two, there probably won't be as many bean acres planted as you might think there would be, because of the fact that the economics really point to taking the prevent plant rather than following with beans.
Right. So the economics, and I talked to Gary Schnitke earlier in the week. We'll use that next week. I actually talked to him Friday afternoon, and maybe you can maybe this is where you're headed, is that you take the prevent plant, but the economics say go ahead and take the 1% a day and plant corn, and you still make more money. Is that right? Is that where you're headed?
Or don't plant anything and –
Or yeah. don't plant anything. Yeah. So when I had the discussion with Gary, and they'll have some calculators out next week on the FarmDoc Daily website and FarmDoc site at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu that allow producers to plug in their own histories, and they can find out whether it pays or not.
And let me say, talk to your agent, use the calculators.
Right, the calculators, the agent.
It really makes a big difference on your yields and the corn, corn and bean APHs and all that. So
the people over there that I spoke with last week, Todd, are saying to me anyway, look, if I have a livestock need, if I have elevator contracts or specialty corn, I'm going to stretch it all the way to June 10th. I can go another week past or 5 days past of preventive planting, but some of the agents that I spoke with that I work with and do seminars over there with, they said a lot of guys are not going to get themselves caught into an early freeze scenario with that kind of money sitting on the line.
And I think a couple of things. One is, I'm sorry, Mike, the North Dakota or the Dakotas is like May 20th, so it's there on the late plant date, and this next week's or this weekend's weather is going to have a big deal on whether they do it or not.
Well, I agree with Mike. People are going to plant until June 10th because, you know, if you run the numbers comparing to plant corn to beans, it still pays to plant corn. The University of Illinois has their website where you can go on and test it, and we're at $269 bushel or dollars an acre benefit to plant corn. You know, the other side is that Ohio, they're not being planted. We don't think they'll have 50% planted by the 1st of June, and their yields are going down, so that's bullish. There's acres in the South that are being lost, so that's bullish. But are we going to plant beans? Of the last 6 years when we had late planting on corn, four of them we increased bean acres. Two of them, there was a slight decrease. So I think they're probably still going to plant beans even if they don't get the corn planted by the 10th.
One other note for the folks that are to the east. I'm told the Ag Econ folks at Ohio State will be putting the same kind of program together for producers in that area as well. Then we have 3 million acres in the south that are underwater. Their prevent plant dates are earlier than ours here, actually, for corn. Will those go to soybeans?
I think they will. I think if they can get in, which it very, very seems unlikely that they are going to get in time to plant the corn, but I think they will definitely try to get the beans in.
I think here's the bottom line is in March we saw, what was it, a 4 million acre increase in total acres on the prospective plantings. Are we really going to get those extra acres, overall acres that we talked about?
Right. So that brings us back to the number the Lynn Group put out earlier in the week, which was 89.5 million acres for corn, which is down from the 92-plus that USDA had in March.
Yeah, and you run those through the balance sheets of last week's USDA report or 2 weeks ago, and you're talking about a less than a 500 million bushel carryover or right at it. And it really makes me think that, okay, if the European wheat – to me, May is the big month here because the wheat market – is going to be made, or the wheat production in France and Europe is going to be made in May. Our corn planting is going to be made in May in terms of both acres and prospective yield. If you add everything up, the next 10 days are absolutely critical on the supply side. And if you don't get what you need out of Mother Nature, that's where you go looking at the old highs if you're a technician. Even if you're a fundamentalist, you would say to yourself, why wouldn't wheat be back to where it was last February if the global production is falling to levels below last year's production for the world?
Here are the way the numbers in Chicago finished for wheat. July high of 834.5, a low at 729.75 settlement price. In July at 806.5, up 78.75 for this year. Next year, July 12 at 920.75, 29.75 higher. From the bean pit, the nearby July at 1396 high, low at 1312.25. Settlement price at $13.80.25, finished 50.75 higher. November beans at $13.50.5, up 39.75. And then The live cattle futures June contract at 109.42 and a half, top bottom at 104.40, settled 104.97 and a half. They were off $4.02 and a half. Feeders were at $125.40, down $3.25. Lean hog settled at $90.50, down $2.57 and a half. Corn, soybeans, bullish, friendly, uncertain at this point.
Oh, I think at this point I am definitely friendly corn because of what's going on. Ethanol production's good. Delayed planting, and that definitely turns into yield loss. Beans, I am very nervous on beans. Our crush number is down. Export sales are down. We could add 15 million to the ending stocks of beans, and I don't think we're going to lose acres on beans either.
Friendly, but excited to hedge the next 10 days, because I think between the fund sentiment and what we've talked about here on the program, if you can't go higher at this time period, when will you be able to with this kind of momentum? But remember what that Ohio guy said. You asked him what would happen with the ethanol guys, and he said they'll just shut down. That's where you have that demand issue come back and bite you, Todd. And I think we got to keep that in our minds as we go through this.
Exactly. I think that, you know, we can have a spike up here, but you have to be ready to make some decision whenever that happens.
You're listening to Commodity Week. This edition was recorded on the 20th day of May. When we return, we'll talk with PGFBest.com's Tim Hannigan. You can always hear Commodity Week anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org or search Commodity Week on iTunes.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. A slow-moving upper-level low-pressure system brought cloudy and cool weather to much of Illinois this week. After unseasonably warm weather last week, this week was a complete reversal with temperatures running 10 to 13 degrees below normal. The low-pressure system crossed through Illinois last weekend, but never really pushed much farther away until Thursday. Some weak ridging began to develop over Illinois on Thursday, and that created some breaks in the clouds and allowed for more sunshine. Most of Illinois was dry during the week after some widespread rain last weekend. The only part of Illinois with above normal rainfall this week was a band across north-central parts of the state, where showers and some thunderstorms occurred related to that upper-level low. Another slow-moving weather system will be approaching Illinois from the plains this weekend, and that will keep chances for showers and thunderstorms alive across Illinois through at least Wednesday of next week. Fortunately, the winds will be southwesterly ahead of this system, and that should help keep temperatures at or even somewhat above normal next week. Drier and cooler air should return to Illinois on Thursday through Friday. There is a chance pop-up showers and thunderstorms could return to the state next weekend. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the May 20th edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists today in studio include Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign, Illinois, Mike Zuzel of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's in Lafayette, Indiana, and Mike Georgie of Allendale from Mahomet, Illinois. Tim Hannigan is our guest from PGF Best. He has 39 years' experience as a futures and option trader for retail accounts, and of course today serves as PGFBest.com's senior grain analyst. His concise and analytical research reports appear every trading day online, of course, at where? PGF Best. A little history, and then our first question. For 10 years, his bio says, of those 39 years, Hannigan was vice president and senior market analyst for Harvey Commodities. During that period, he says he refined his trading methodology and tested the technical reversal system he created to enter and exit all trades. So the question, Mr. Hannigan, to start is, how well does it work? And if you can't tell us that, or how well it, if you can't tell how it works, can you tell us what the track record for that system might be?
Well, I'm here, so that tells you something. You know, when you're in the business almost 40 years, it's a constant improvement, almost like being an athlete. You got to work on your game every day, and you got to constantly improve it, or you can disappear from this business real fast. So, and we're doing very, very well. It's very difficult to explain how a technical system works. It's almost like a painting. You know, they say the Mona Lisa. You look at it. some people look at it and say, "What a beautiful woman." Others will look at it and say, "I've never seen a more homelier-looking woman." And so, it, you know, a picture speaks a thousand words. And looking at charts and understanding charts are very difficult to many people. They look at them as a bull or look at them as a bear. And what I do essentially is I balance. I'm not a technician, nor am I a fundamentalist. I'm somewhere in between, where I know that the agricultural markets, there's times of the year when 70% of the pricing movement is fundamentals, 30% is technical. There's times of the year when it's 90% technical and 10% fundamental, and you have to know when to balance it. And with these large index and trend-following funds, which are very, very different creatures, you have to remember, like our guests, we've been around a long time. We remember when you had $5 and $10 million seasoned agricultural trading funds and the commercials. Archer Daniels, Midland, and Cargill and Bungie controlled all the seasonal trends, and the $5 and $10 million fund managers controlled the daily trends. Now we're dealing with $5 and $10 billion index and trend-following funds who don't know a bushel of corn from a phone booth, and they don't care. And you have to understand how they trade. So I think that's where a lot of my science comes from, and where the accuracy is, and where I get my following is the people recognizing you've got to know what these index and trend following funds are doing. What are they trading? Because they're probably 90% of the pricing movement daily, and they have very different seasonalities on how they trade than the old-fashioned commercial interest that used to control the market. So every day is an experience, and every day we're reevaluating, and it's almost 1 week at a time, if not 1 day at a time, with the technical analysis and balancing the fundamentals.
So what's the track record on the reversal system?
Well, I'm not a CTA. I'm not a trading advisor, so I'm not allowed to publish records. You know, it's just we invite people to come into the site and follow the research on a day-to-day and week-to-week basis, and we let them, you know, pass judgment on that. But to have a track record with the NFA, to have a track record published, you either have to be a certified trading advisor or a fund manager, which I'm not. I'm the senior grain analyst, so my research goes out to many, 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 many people that I actually have no contact with in many ways. So,
Tim, switching gears a little bit, is the trade starting to get a little bit nervous about the recent bean demand in terms of exports and negative crush margins? And what's your near-term outlook on the beans, especially with this planting issue?
Well, no. It depends on who you're talking about. I think the grassroots people are very concerned about it. If I'm a bean grower, I'm thinking, what happened to my demand? You know, where's China? But I think the funds, particularly the large trading funds, understand that, you know, when President Obama met with the Chinese premier early in the year, I think it was early in February, there was a meeting. And they set up their agricultural grain strategies for the year. And they do this every year, okay? And suddenly something took place 4 days after that meeting. China came in and made the largest daily soybean purchase in the history. They've never made a purchase that big, but it was for the new crop year for 2011-12, whereas the year prior and the 2 years prior, that same meeting, you had a very large sale for the current crop year, or what we'd call old crop year. So that was a message that told us something that President Obama must have told them, look, we're running out of corn at the rate you're buying soybeans. We're going to be running out of beans, too, and it's just going to keep driving the price up. Let's do this. We're reasonable gentlemen. This is easy to figure out. Brazil's having a nice crop. Argentina's doing well. Buy everything near term from them. You can continue to buy from us, but for new crop delivery, where the uncertainty certainly still lie there, and the gentlemen have talked something about that today, but at least that's new crop, and that's what we've seen. They've been shuffling their demand. They've been canceling some old crop shipments, moving it to new crop. China's demand is not going away. China's demand for U.S. soybeans will break another record next year, but they're going to be taking everything for new crop shipment after September 1st. I would use the term, expect China to feast on U.S. beans. Now, as far as you know, South America is concerned, I think the funds look at the demand that's been pushed to that area. Something's also changed in South America. So many of the people down there now are U.S. agricultural people. They've gone down there, they've cleared the land, they've bought the land, and they're growing. And they're also doing something they've not done before down in Brazil, store grain. It was always harvest the crop. It would go from field right to the port in a Mercedes-Benz truck. They didn't store anything. So, of course, before the summer highs even came in, Brazil was sold out. And now comes the uncertainty of the growing season in the U.S., the largest producer exporter in the world. And then it's always too hot here, too dry there, even though we always produce wonderful crops, it seems. There's always a weather rally. And those people down in Brazil said, look where these summer highs are coming. Look at the price swings now that we have these multi-billion-dollar trading funds in. The summer swings are just enormous. What they've done the last 2 years is committed a lot of money to storage facilities. They're storing more grain. I don't know if it's 10%. I don't know if it's 15%. There's no reporting facilities. They don't have to report. But you've got to assume it's something measurable. Why sell it at a low when you can sell it at a high? So we're going to start to see Brazil finish selling at the end of this month. That's my opinion. They're pretty much going to take the rest and put it into storage. And when I say Brazil, I don't mean as a country or government, but those exporters down there, private exporters, and they're going to store the rest of the grain and try and doll it out, hopefully, at summer month high weather premiums, assuming they occur, as they have occurred in the last 3 to 4 years. And now that may cut into our business a little bit, you know, come this fall, but I think with what China is doing with protein, the mandate for protein into their diet, the massive expansion of the hog herds, their chicken populations, not to mention their ethanol expansion, they're going to take not only everything else that Brazil will sell, but they're going to take everything we can sell too. Hey, I would imagine we're going to have quite a cash rally at harvest time.
Hey, Tim, a lot of talk about acres this week. Do you think we've lost acres, and if so, how many?
You know, here's my opinion. 2 years ago, we had the exact same situation. Here comes La Nina rearing her ugly head. We didn't have a lot of experience with La Nina during planting. But if you remember a couple of years ago, we had the latest planting dates on record. And I can still remember myself talking to clients and people of interest wondering if we're ever going to get the crop in and will they be switching. And suddenly, farmers were just planting in the rain. They were getting it in. There's a huge cost. When you think of fuel costs today, when you think of fertilizer costs today, what they used to be just 10, 15 years ago, huge. You've got to get it in. And we saw that 2 years ago. They made every effort. Did they get it in late? You bet they got it in late. But they got it in. And I think there's a lot of faith in the biogenetic science as well. There's some real miracles in thinking with those seeds, and I think a lot of growers, you know, they'll tell you, I can plant it under cement and that stuff just grows. I'm going to gamble. I spent a lot of money on this. I'm putting it in, and it's going in late, and I think they're going to plant just about everything that they intended to, and I'm basing it all on what happened 2 years ago. And then they'll gamble on the rest of the year. And what did happen 2 years ago was that cooler and cold, wet winter we had, and then the cold, wet spring and the late planting. Boy, does that sound familiar. That's this year. What happened was that La Nina continued, and it led to a fairly cool, wet summer, and everything kind of worked out well for the growers. So it paid to plant late, or it didn't hurt, let's put it that way. And I think the memory is still there on that. I'm not ready, because of that experience in my life here in this industry, to say they're not going to plant this or they're going to plant more of that. Not yet. 2 weeks from now, 2.5 weeks from now, I might change my mind. I try to tie myself into the best weather guys in the industry. And, yeah, it's going to be wet next week, and everybody understands it. And planting delays are going to be pushed even further back. But all indications are we got a window opening up after the 29th, 30th, right in there. And we've already got some very respected people are already saying the whole month of June is going to be warmer and drier. But if that window, that planting window opens up, after we come in on Sunday night and Monday, I would suspect Sunday night and Monday's trade is going to be the seventh consecutive week where we've opened up higher. I would imagine with month end coming, the last full week of the month, knowing funds have to, you know, they can pay 1 to 3%.
Tim, we have to say goodbye.
You got to say goodbye?
Yep.
Look for a rally early in the week, but it's going to sell off late on that window opening up.